but don't have our policies for me. And I think it's important to remember here. But that's important because if the full member in this committee can attend because they attend that admission, but there are no apology here, that's what's going to be heaven. The whole in class is not that advisable here. It's that important that we put our house in order. Understand the new rules and start to work on them and then see what else we have to do. We have convened the mission police to be briefed by our department and the administration is here. The apologies from a minister in India on official business. Even the Minister Ned is attending the Cabinet Subcommittee. Even the Minister of Affairs is in heaven attending the executive report of House of Tradition Leaders. And then, therefore, the friends, acting Director General, to take us through. We know, of course, Director General used to be Madonna, deployed. But then, we keep now the acting Director General. He is going to take us through. And we engage the report. Welcome, welcome to the team. It's not the first time you are meeting us. There's a lot of personnel which new council has been called, and ensuring that they understand what is supposed to be done. Of course, anyway, we need to train them, or training purposes by the department, also the major role to play. Have to basically that the new councillors must be taken for granted that some of them are bad, but you know a large number of them are some of them. And therefore we need the help to basic as a program to be explained to them, take them through, understand all the principles of guiding principles of the to safety program. We are welcoming all the members of our first meeting. After our very exciting election, I think we're all proud that we are here. And we should continue with the elections with fair and fair. And in Saturday, we can also be free and fair. And then we are all able of that. And this is our first meeting, colleagues, that allowed the department, the acting delegation, to brief the committee, and I think the briefing is here. I'm told that the projector sometimes not working, that it's not even here. It's there, but it's not working. I think they have to use the document that is given to us. APA, we are fine. Okay. And we are collecting. And another point that was raised here was because they are a of the party. That the new rule says, the meeting will only be a meeting of the Committee of Parliament if you remain four, not only for caucus, for one purpose. My members must always be four for a meeting to continue. One third of 11, I think, would be four. Because if you're not 3.5, would be four. So that is that important because they've been raising these issues with us. And I think that our consulate and the weeks and the team, I think, are going to assist us. To ensure that our quorum is there, we don't find a situation where there's no quorum. Thank you very much, colleagues. Let us invite let us introduce your teams. We have a new councillor, we know you, but it's very fair also to introduce your team for us. I think it's your fine. You're fine. Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thanks for the introduction. I thought I was going to say this is the first time I'm engaging the committee in my Hollywood role. But then you have stolen my thunder by indicating that DG Madonsela is now the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I have two colleagues with me who are going to be going through the presentation and also responding to questions. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I've got colleagues next to the honorable member there is G.D. Gosnell, who is in the office of the DG. And next to her is our expert on anti-corruption matters, and the one who is going to take us through the presentation is Mr. Nkashe. Next to him is Mr. Mutashuping. Mr. Mutashuping is acting on my substantive position. And on my right, I've got Mr. Zemeza and Levon Tekane. Those are the colleagues that are with us today. Perhaps before they start presenting, just to indicate that this report is premised on the four pillars that are defined in the anti-corruption strategy and the integrity management framework. These four pillars are more relating to methods of prevention, methods of detection, investigation, and method of resolution. Now, when in 2014 a decision was taken by the minister to source forensic reports from municipalities, it was motivated by the fact that there was an outcry in the local government environment that there are various forensics that are conducted and commissioned by municipalities, but there seemingly is no proper resolution around these particular matters or cases. In short, there was a minimal disciplinary action that was being taken. There was also no recovery of losses that were incurred. There were no individuals that were held accountable, and very little around criminal prosecutions that were happening. And in cases where you find that the report is also indicating some anomalies that have been done by service providers themselves, contracts were not being cancelled, and there was very minimal prevention on the recurrence because we were not able to say these are the number of people that have been prosecuted based on the reports themselves. So the reports that they are going to be presenting today, in my own analysis, is not necessarily giving us the good news in terms of whether all those things that I've talked about in terms of resolution are dealt with, because I feel that the percentage of what has been referred and what has been actioned by those law enforcement agencies, it is not enough good news to then say these are things that you can communicate in the environment to prevent the recurrence of these particular matters. The colleagues will present what we have and the progress that has been communicated in the anti-corruption task team in the plan. We also made some follow-ups last week with those law enforcement agencies where these cases have been referred. And some of them just indicated that they will only be able to give us the reports when the DCPI said they will give us reports on Thursday. You will also know in the report that we also talk about those particular cases that are prescribed. It's not necessarily prescribed in the whole environment. It's only prescribed in terms of the SIU Act, because it provides that the SIU, when we refer cases to them, if the case is over 3 years, they will say in their own act that is prescribed, and therefore they cannot deal with it. And those cases are then referred to other agencies like the OBS and the other forfeiture units to see whether there is room for other forfeiture. So perhaps without wasting much of the time of the committee, let me allow Mr. Nkashe to go through the report, and Mr. Chopin will be responding to the questions of honorable members, and then I will perhaps provide a concluding remark after the engagement with the committee.
Thank you very much, General. Thanks, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues at the large. Today I'm presenting to the committee the cases of the progress on the forensic assessments, and then the presentation outline is indicated as follows. Before the depots, the introduction and background, the reports assessed the province, objectives of the assessments, principles used in the assessment, stakeholders to assess assessments, areas emerging from the assessment, and cases referred to agencies, feedback from law enforcement agencies, challenges regarding implementation of recommendations, other measures being considered to accelerate implementation, conclusion and recommendations. The purpose is to provide the portfolio committee with the progress on the implementation of recommendations of forensic reports commissioned by the province and municipalities. And then our introduction is as follows. There are forensic reports commissioned by municipalities to investigate various irregularities, including, but not limited to, contravention of legislation, regulations, municipal policies, and other prescripts ranging from procurement and human resource management and any related municipal functions. Most of the forensic reports made recommendation that certain remedial and other corrective measures be taken. However, some of the recommendations made were not implemented by municipalities. Hence, the minister took a decision that all reports are submitted to the regional department. In the background, the department requested the province and municipalities to submit forensic reports commissioned by municipalities since April 2009, and this was made available in October 2014. And the department received 119 forensic reports from provinces and municipalities. Out of these 19 received, 9 have been assessed, and 10 copies submitted were not really a forensic report, as they were more on the human resource management activities that reflects to misconduct and other related matters. The assessment of this report was conducted in line with the governance pillars of vector basis. And then the following slide reflects the provinces that submitted cases to the departments. Eastern Cape had by then 34 cases. Free State submitted 5. Gauteng submitted 2. KZN 19. Limpopo 11. Mpumalanga 15. Northern Cape 3. Northwest 4. And Western Cape 16. And the total of those cases are very assessed. 109. And what the assessment sought to achieve was as follows. Assisting the department to facilitate criminal and civil and disciplinary evidence emanating from forensic report recommendations. Assess the extent to which provinces and municipalities are implementing recommendations emanating from those forensic reports. Identify other areas of corruption and related offence that require focused attention. Principles of the assessment were identified as follows. Recommendation with assets for future potential reports where criminal and civil matters could be pursued with the assistance of law enforcement agencies. Reports where internal and disciplinary processes can be pursued by municipalities and monitor how municipalities are implementing the recommendations. other areas of corruption and related offences that require focused attention. Stakeholders took part in the assessments were identified as follows: the Director of Public of Private Crime Investigation (DPCI), Asset of HR Units, Special Investigation Units, and National Treasury and Office of the State Attorney. And then the areas that emerged from the assessments were identified as follows: the irregular, which is called an unauthorized expenditure, procurement irregularities, appointment irregularities, theft of cash, fraud, corruption, and maladministration. Cases referred to law enforcement agencies by 52 reports referred to the following agencies. 11 forensic reports were sent to SIU for further assessments to determine if the cases are pending required investigation or maybe they need further mission. And 23 forensic reports were referred to the DCI for further investigation. As when they were reviewed, we discovered that they need further investigations. And the FIU has identified that there is a potential for assessment of official in 18 cases, and one case still to be assessed as it was received towards the end of the financial year. The remaining 57 have been referred back to the agencies requesting progress regarding the implementation of recommendations. Those are the cases that when there was an assessment, we discovered that those are the HR matters not relating to criminal in or any crime elements. Feedback on cases referred to law enforcement agencies. Out of 11 public reports referred to the SIU, this is the motivation stage. Motivation stage in this regard to be referred and better. They are currently busy trying to obtain more information to request the Office of the President to include them in the proclamation or approve the proclamation on with regards to those cases, while three are on the assessment stage. The assessment stage also on this one would mean that they are still doing the preliminary investigation to see whether the case attempts any further investigation or any, they can also be part of the proclamation if the necessity emerges. The SIU concluded that the other five forensic reports are being dealt with by other law enforcement agencies. That means out of the 11 cases, there was other cases which was identified by the SIU data. They need to be referred to the DPCI, the HOPS for further investigation. Out of the three forensic reports referred to DPCI, they provided progress on the four forensic reports. Two of the cases are in court, while two are under investigation. Out of the 18 forensic reports referred to the FAU, they provided progress on six matters. And we are waiting feedback from various provinces regarding how far are they with the 7 cases that have been referred back to MECs for implementation. Challenges regarding the implementation of recommendation emanating from forensic reports. We have realized that there is a lack of council resolution with regards to implementation of the recommendation emanating from forensic reports. The department also established a provincial forum with district municipalities to monitor the implementation of the recommendation by municipalities. Given the amount of time that has lapsed since some of the forensic reports were commissioned, some of the matters have prescribed meetings of SIU and will be referred to other investigating agencies. That means some of the cases which are more than 3 years, they will be referred to the HOPS or the DCI because they don't have a time frame of investigation, just like the SIU. Lack of consequence management by municipalities, instances where irregularities and transgression by councillors officials have been proven. The department is monitoring disciplinary cases in municipalities and officials found guilty and are including in the database of dismissed staff maintained by the department. And other measures being looked at to accelerate and respond to some of the recommendations. In this regard, the department is engaging with the National Prosecuting Authority with a view to request them to assign a dedicated team of prosecutors focusing on specifically on cases of corruption and related offences in municipalities. Focus on building of solid relations with law enforcement agencies and other stakeholders. In conclusion, we continue to collaborate with law enforcement agencies and municipalities to ensure that the success of this project. The focus will also be in obtaining conscious resolutions with regard to the implementation of the recommendations. And it is also recommended that the portfolio committee note the implementation of the progress report on the forensic cases.
Thank you very much. For this session, I invite those who want to comment on the report. Are there any questions that colleagues want to? Honorable Mayor, Honorable Tato, Honorable Chair, Honorable Matondo, Honorable Da.
Chair, thank you. Chair, I know the report and I asked the department to come back to us. It is almost 2 years since you first requested this investigation. And acting DG, it was on the initiative of this committee that the minister then implemented. We asked for it. We asked for all these reports to be gathered up and further investigation because there was a distinct lack of consequence management. Which brings me to my first point. The AG has criticized municipalities across this entire country about consequence management. And there needs to be something in the regulations, whether it's the MFMA regulations or the Systems Act regulations or whatever, but there needs to be something that A, triggers an automatic investigation when there is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In other words, when the Auditor General identifies fruitless and wasteful expenditure in a municipality, it should automatically trigger a forensic investigation in that municipality. That's the first part. The second is, regardless of whether it's an automatic key triggered forensic investigation or not, whether the municipality tries to conduct a forensic investigation or your department decides to conduct a forensic investigation, there should be an automatic reporting of such an investigation to the department at a provincial level. In other words, if we start an investigation in Municipality A, the minute that investigation is concluded, a copy of the report should be submitted to the provincial departments of province governments. So that there is a tracking of the report, and the consequences then follow the recommendations of the report. Because exactly what we've seen here, the description of criminal activities by the SIU, and I know particularly the Etiqueni case, and I think that's the Manasseh report that has prescribed. Now, we've been jumping up and down for years about the Manasseh report, but it's not the only one. The Ernst & Young report in Buffalo City, the Kabuza report in Nelson Mandela Bay, the Kabuza report in Makana. Where are the actions that are being taken, the criminal actions, the criminal prosecutions that are arriving out of those? So these are things, Chairperson, that I think we need to push, and I strongly recommend that we amend the necessary regulations, that we request the Minister to request that to amend the necessary regulations to put those triggers in place, that when there's fruits and wasteful expenditure, it triggers an automatic forensic investigation, and when there is any forensic investigation, a copy is automatically lodged with the department at a provincial level. So that is my first point. My second is, I note that in terms of the provinces that submitted reports, two of the lowest reporting were the Northern Cape and the Northwest. Now, the Northwest is arguably the worst run province when it comes to local governments. We've got every municipality in the Northwest received a disclaimer or an adverse audit opinion, if I'm not mistaken, in the last financial year, and yet we only received 4 investigative reports on those from those municipalities. There's something wrong here. Either the province is covering up or the municipalities are covering up. And I strongly urge that the department gets hands on and goes on the ground and sees what's going on there. Chair, then, in the discussion, there was a lot of talk about the criminality, but there are other aspects of consequences that need to be taken into account. For example, there's the financial recovery in terms of Section 32 of the MFMA, where anyone who has been responsible for irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure is required to repay that funding. Now, on a personal basis, now, we need to see those consequences come into play. And it doesn't go to the actual forfeiture unit. It's incumbent on the municipalities to initiate that and to recover those funds. It's incumbent on the municipal manager. But frequently, the municipal manager is the person that is responsible for the, whatever you want to call it, the regular unauthorized fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Okay? There was a point made that the department was awaiting feedback from various provinces regarding how the 57 cases are being implemented. I'd really like to know when we can expect a report on that. And then my last point is, and it goes back to the previous point that I said about the consequences, the non-criminal consequences. A lot of the issues relate to councillors, not necessarily officials, but councillors who are involved in misconduct. And the code of conduct for councillors needs to be implemented. Now, here we have a problem because the speaker is responsible, the speaker in the municipality is responsible for enforcing the code of conduct. But there is a lack of political will on the part of the speaker to enforce that code of conduct. So what can we do, either through legislation or through regulation, what can we do to ensure that when there is someone who is implicated in misconduct, that action is taken against that counselor, that the code of conduct is enforced, and that the speaker takes the necessary steps? Thank you, Chair.
I think let us invite the team to answer the many questions.
Some of this is raised by the honorable member, I think, in relation to the suggestions that are to be made, specifically in relation to strengthening the existing regulations under the Processing Act. We take note of the suggestions that we put forth, and we are in the process of reviewing. We know that since the Minister promulgated the regulations for the economic process as President and Senior Managers, we are looking at the impact and the implementation challenges that we are experiencing implementing these regulations. So it's important that, for example, this of importance in relation to the forensic investigations that attributes that immediately wants the risk that there are allegations of financial or misconduct vis-a-vis what is already contained in the regulations. That requires the mayor or in other instances the municipal manager to conduct investigations immediately upon. So what the honorable minister is suggesting is that we need to also put another section in the regulations that triggers immediately once there is any allegation of financial misconduct or any misconduct in these organizations, automatic investigations of local societies. We'll look into that. Honorable members, in relation to the 57 cases that we are awaiting from the municipalities for implementation of the recommendations from the forensic reports, that in most instances relates to irregular and invalid appointments made in municipalities. The department
have a dedicated unit that deals with issues relating to the remedial actions that should be taken in instances where municipalities are expected to take certain steps on disciplinary measures. We've already indicated that there are being monitored from the instance where the disciplinary cases are proceeding, and we're looking at popularizing this report that talks to municipalities dealing specifically with the recommendations made in the reports, so that we are also able to assist municipalities and hands-on support to finalize all these cases, because we've got, as we've already indicated, the database for dismissed staff. You recall that in the remission that we're 2014, the database where all, when all cases have been concluded, the trust members are included in the database, and in instances when these parties are joined, there's a cooling period where particular officials who are in the database are not supposed to be appointed in this one particular period. Honorable members, when we look at issues relating to the report that we see from municipalities, the matter stands. We depend on provinces and municipalities to submit such reports. And it is true that in the event that certain cases are not reported to the department, we might not necessarily be able to put those in the list, but we will cover on this as the other members indicated that there may be some sort of a hands-on support or hands-on investigation in these places where forensic reports have been commissioned, that we follow that until up to the submission of the reports. You see, in the absence of any regulatory program that forces provinces and municipalities to submit the minister, once such forensic investigations have been commissioned, it becomes very difficult for us to, with certainty, come to the particular committee and say that this is a credible report that we, or the number of cases that we receive from provinces and municipalities. Maybe another way of an innovative manner in which we are to engage with provinces in relation to us from the instance when forensic investigations are commissioned, we are able to capture the particular number at the stage where submissions are to be made. I think that will be the right way to go to. I think in relation to the other matters that relate to where political officials or councillors involved in these allegations of financial corruption,
I don't know which one to let them respond. Honorable Miriam, I think the issue that you are raising relating to the will of the speaker to enforce consequence management to councillors is very difficult on our side to just say yes, this is what we can be able to do to those figures. But there are two things that as the department we're doing. One is in the council admission program that we are having, the partnership with SALGA, the local government, and the school of government. We have emphasized that when it comes to the issue of speakers, because if you look at the past 2 weeks, we were doing the training of the trainers, and we have decided that we are not necessarily going to take people who have not been in that space. You need people who have been in the local government space, so that when they talk to councillors, they are talking from experience and from practical realities that happen there. So that's one area that we think we'll be able to be indicating to speakers that when you are there, you have to manage the issue around the code of conduct of councillors. The second issue is we have in the department done two documents. One is the anti-corruption strategy that we have reviewed, and then the integrity management framework. Now, if you look at the first pillar that I was referring to, which is what we can control as the department, because it talks about issues of prevention. One of the issues that we think of doing is that we will need to have a separate workshops at the district level, where you go through the integrity management framework to the office of the speaker and the ethics officers in various municipalities, so that they understand the role that they have to play within that particular context. So those are the two interventions that we think we'll be able to deal with in relation to the speakers. There is, however, one particular risk that I have. The unit itself is not having that particular capacity. What we have done to really mitigate that capacity issue was to say, let's have the B2B teams that are in various places to understand what the anti-corruption strategy is all about, what the integrity management framework is all about, and also conduct a sort of an in-house training for those people, so that when you put together the training program for various districts, those people are able to deal with that particular training program. So these are some of the things that we have been doing. Perhaps some of the things that you have made as comments are comments that you have dealt with, and comments that we will have to incorporate into the regulations that we're having. Chair, I think those are the few things that I thought I needed to comment on. Perhaps it was not specific in respect to the number of cases in various provinces that we have received. If we look at these issues of detection, because issues of detection in the four pillars of the anti-corruption strategy sometimes are whistleblowers. Now, Mr. Kashe is also dealing with this National Anti-Corruption Hotline. There are some of the things that come through that particular hotline, but they may not necessarily be zooming deeper into various cases in other municipalities. Those are some of the cases that we do look at, but you find that it is not necessarily forensic. There has not been a forensic investigation. It might act as a trigger to say, guys, we have received this thing. What we do with those particular cases, we write to head of department and the MEC to say, we have received this particular matter from a whistleblower. Can you be able to look at this matter and investigate and report to the minister in the next 40 days? So we have written to all the MECs in various provinces on various aspects. Some of the aspects are aspects of the forensic report. Some of the aspects are aspects that come from the anti-corruption hotline. And we give them 40 days to say, respond to us in the next 40 days. If you don't respond to us in the next 40 days, then the minister can initiate his own processes to go to those particular areas. So that's how we handle this matter. But the four that are here and the three are those that when we wrote to them, we said, can you give us the forensics that you are dealing with, and these are the ones that we are pursuing. That's what I would say.
Thank you very much. One of the
gentlemen. No, thanks, sir. We really appreciate the reports, in particular when you look at the forensic report of the tech process. We want to urge the department here so that we reported this case so that we knew, so that it's easy for the committee to zoom to areas where there is no action. We want to appeal or urge the department to ensure that instead of clouding the cases, all of them together, like you say in the Eastern Cape, there are 34 cases of issues of policy. Mm-hmm. And they should break up so that we know that in terms of the 34, here are the matters that are submitted in the law enforcement. They were related to fraudulent, corruption, maladministration, so that if you break those things, it will be easy for us to understand as to monitor even the provinces and to understand these provinces, that this province is galvanized by this type of issues that is related to the forensic report. But for now, the way that you have summarized, it is even difficult to see which are the provinces that have already been finalized, except that we have referred this matter to law enforcement. And the law enforcement, the only thing that they will report to, they will say, the assessment to the stage, which are those things, are those matters. Some of them motivational stage, very sensitive. You know, it's difficult really to understand the reality of those cases. For me, that type of request. But if you can make a sort of a table that in this process, these are management issues, enforcement issues, these are issues that are related to management, you break it down, then it will be easy for us. At the end of the day, we'll get to the total pieces. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, my colleagues of the department. Wishing work the best in DG when it's responsibility during that time. Chair, I want to zoom into the issue of the Auditor General because in the presentation, the Auditor General is not listed as a stakeholder participating in the assessment, and that for me was the worry. On page 5, slide number 9. Because there's always a big hoo-ha when audit outcomes are released, and the Auditor General is telling us that soon the president got clean audits and so on, and we pay a lot of emphasis to the work in which the Auditor General has done up to the stage of, you know, him presenting the audit outcomes publicly. What happens after that for me is the question. For someone who believes that that should form the basis for the department and just generally for us to zoom in into those matters that are raised there. I checked the point about whistleblowers and so on, but you've got a substantive and an authentic process in the Auditor General, which takes place every year, which on its own should be a solid foundation in us to zoom in. Make an example, the dispatches that have received defense for the past 5 years of the Auditor General, but there's been an action in terms of actually zooming into what is going on. So whilst the merit in raising matters about whistleblowers and other instances of detection, but I think for me the omission of the Auditor General there raises red flags about the seriousness in which we attribute to the work which the Auditor General does. Secondly, Chair, well, of course, now it's a new term of municipalities, but I want to look at the capacity of MPAT and then giving them the necessary strength, support, and capacity for them to be able to perform their duties optimally. In my other life in this parliament, I served as a scholar. And I kid you not, it took us almost a year as a new country to fully understand even the basics of due process. And I think that moving forward, because prevention is better than cure, I think in the new term, a lot of emphasis needs to be paid in ensuring that impacts are functional as municipal council, so that even the month-on-month, quarter-to-quarter, and more near reporting can help us determine and pick up on some of these matters. Having said that, Chair, maybe then an audit is needed of the, you know, the officials in municipalities who are actually there to get a point to impact, whether they've got the requisite skills, knowledge and expertise to do what is expected. But it's all good and more for us to focus on top management, but most of the groundwork and fieldwork is always done at a lower level and need to be particularly the problematic municipalities just the Auditor General that I said. Then there's the issue of audit committees generally, which just never receive or never, you know, the seriousness which they deserve. So some of these things are picked up in-house, but nobody ever receives or takes the time to respond positively to issues that have been. And we need to look at a way on how we're going to offer support to what the committee. Chair, I would like to emphasize, please, that can we get a breakdown of all the reports so we just know who in the zoo in that regard, and for us to do an instance to say whether those who have got reports are not repeat offenders, and that where there is no pattern which is emerging. Chair, my final final point is you've got a number of municipalities that were merged in this region. Some have been disestablished or altogether. And I would want to ask the department to zoom into the final stages of life of those municipalities. Because I get a sense that there's been a high level of fiscal dumping as well as municipalities rounding up their business of operation and functionality before they merge, and whether they really need to do an audit, a large-scale audit of the officials in general, particularly those within the finance and of those municipalities, because a lot of funny things were taking place when these municipalities were rounding up their lifestyles. And let us look at really what happened there. But we want to appreciate that and finally the department has responded positively to the request to the that work actually is being done. And I think that we've now got maybe a clearer picture in terms of what we're dealing with. But sure, what I think does arise is that we need to prioritize that Eastern Cape, because if things are as they are now, because you may change councils and so on, but a lot of this work is not council work, councillors' work. This is work which falls within the parameters of officials. And so, you know, same scripts, a different kind of councillors, that it means that we have really not done it. So, but I do think that the Eastern Cape needs to be prioritized last year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I must start off by saying that I too do welcome the report. This kind of report goes a long way to clarify matters and to assist us to pursue these issues. I think that the department is located at the vantage point, and it is set up for this to get all of this information. And the ongoing way to have this report and engage with it. Secondly, the Jefferson, I'm very much worried about the relationship amongst the law enforcement agencies. Had a weak process without one reading in the newspaper, taking the information through the media about the tension that exists amongst them. Now, there's nothing wrong with the tensions. For as long as people are, you know, quarreling, differing about the best way to do the work. But is everything wrong if the agencies are simply fighting each other, including internal individual agency type problems? Because this impacts on the credibility and the standing of these institutions, and therefore on the institutions of the state overall. So there's a problem there that we need to deal with. So just to emphasize the point, that there's nothing wrong with holding conversations among them. If you have conversations about what is the best possible way of doing work. But there's everything wrong if they're just quibbling and fighting each other and undermining each other. With the fact that the people out there lose faith and trust in institutions of the state. The third one that I want to make is about the NPA, National Prosecuting Authority. Now, the NPA is a very important player. Like the speaker said, I'm of the view that when you count the stakeholders as slide 9, you should include the NPA. That's very important. But the specific thing that I'm interested in relation to the NPA is what's missing in the presentation. Issues I imagine as the NPA engages with the department? What are the specific issues there? I think that's very, very important because we need to find out whether the engagement is leading to improvement of the work that the NPA is supposed to be doing. And if there are challenges, we need to spell out what these challenges are and the way in which we intend to deal with them going forward. The fourth question I want to raise is about the impact of this kind of work on service delivery. Because you see, we're not pursuing this matter like policemen and policewomen. This is not police work. We are pursuing this so that the greater good is not undermined. The greater focus of government work is not undermined. So we do need to restate the office, as I would say, and see what are the implications for service delivery. And we do need to state the obvious because, as we all know, you know, common sense is not that common. It's one that could just elude us. And then we need to pay attention to it. So that we can always compare where, in fact, the work that's being done on an ongoing basis has a positive impact on service delivery and improving the quality of life of people. So people are at the center of it. That's what we need to lose sight of. And the last point, Chairperson, is this whole question of engagement with organized local government. I'm happy that is some representative here, but we do need to continue to explore this as part of the greater effort at ensuring prevention. I think it's very, very important. I think all the signs are there that we're moving in the right kind of direction. But this is one area that we need to pay attention to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now we'll do that.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question was already answered. I was surprised now at the email came to. And I'm quite sure about other questions. But I also want to encourage the partners to encourage the province and the districts to make that the impact this is in this country must have enough spouse. Because most of the impact in this policy that not doesn't have enough cars. The one that's the one person working there on the stretcher. Because sometimes it's only the coordinator. And this is also cause a problem for municipalities when they report the letter today to the cup to the answer. That is why I want to also encourage you the department can look on this particular the impact of this for their report stars. And also to when the DJ answered the question saying make the equity leave to minister that they must answer the question about what follow-up they give in municipalities. They must also give them the time frames that within this time frames they must get the answers on how far the issue taken to the court and how far the issue taken to the strategy, because for the strategy it takes a long time to do with the matter. That makes people not to take that municipality not seriously. Because the municipalities, all municipalities are corrupt, they are the corrupt position. additional to that debt. Thank you for that, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think, Honorable Chair, about the observation that you've made in terms of slide number 10, I think the colleagues have taken note of that. Is that the observation that I just told them, that we should be able to provide the committee with information that indicates that out of the 109 cases, how many are having, how many in which province are having post procurement irregularities? What are these post procurement irregularities about? How many are having the theft of cash? So we just gave them that instruction to embellish the report more, so that as and when the committee requires that, we are able to say this is how the breakdown in terms of the 109 that have been assessed and those issues that have emerged from the assessment is looking at. So I think the mere fact that you have raised it, it further strengthened my take, and then I'll be holding them to account. I give them time, they know it's over the week. The Honorable Chef Frank, on the issue of the AG, I think when I just started to just give a broader overview, I said this report that we are presenting today is more on the issues of investigation and resolution. AG comes in on the issues of detention, because that is where you get some trigger to say there is something happening in this particular space. So it becomes a sort of an issue of detection. So we have not necessarily put it outside, because when you talk about the issues of detention bodies, look at what other people are saying, there might be something in there. And then that triggers the kind of investigation that needs to come in. Even the issues around the audit committees. Now, you also mentioned the issue around the APEX. We have now been looking at how APEX have been functioning across the various provinces. And one of the things that emerged from our assessment was that the mere fact that APEX are section 79 committees is having sort of a risk element. Because in the event that you find that the chairperson of the MPEC committee becomes very vocal and very particular about raising some of the issues in council, they just say, okay, fine, we are removing you as the chair. That's how Section 79 committee is. And we have been saying we need to strengthen the Structures Act, and especially that section that deals with the role and the manner in which council can decide on Section 29 committees. We are also aware, Honorable Mdaur and Honorable Senwa, about the kind of capacity that is there to support the MPEX. In fact, to be honest, we have not done another audit till then. We're only finding that in most cases, except for the metros, you will find only one person who is supporting that. So it's a question that we'll continue to engage with the municipalities around it. Now, with regard to the municipalities that have merged, it is correct that there might be some funny things that could be happening, especially on the end. But we, from the department, let's say from SALGA, the National Members Assembly, there were some documents that were issued. We further issued some guidelines from the department where we were indicating what should not be done. Especially issues like appointments of contractors that are beyond a financial year,
and any other appointment of staff, especially at the senior management level. I think honorable members might be aware that towards the end of August, Swane had advertised the municipal manager, deputy city manager. I personally stopped them because I wrote to them and say this is not within the regulations and you can't do that now. Also because even in some of the positions that they had advertised were only ending next year prior, so that you're not following the regulations in terms of what should go in. And I would want to see what is it that you are putting out, because number one, it was not even put in the national paper. So we stopped that. They came back to us to say, look, we are changing this to the end of August. Still, but they need to see that advert, because the advert is defined within the regulation. What are the things that need to be in the advert? So those are some of the things that we've done. But specifically the issue of Eastern Cape, because we were having this municipal transitional grant. Eastern Cape came to us to say, no, we can't transfer that money to those municipalities because they had observed that there are certain things that might not necessarily be happening in the manner that it should happen. So we then said, okay, fine, for those municipalities who are not necessarily going to be transferred, if we transfer, we'll transfer straight to the provinces. Even those municipalities that we said we are transferring, we were supposed to first get a sort of an implementation plan as to what is it that you will be doing in the next 2 months, which require this kind of money for us to be able to transfer. I'm not so sure about the issue of the lifestyle audits of those people who are in finance. We might wish to have it, but I don't want to promise the honorable members that we'll be able to do it because we don't have that capability within the department. It's a matter that we may continue to engage on, and perhaps if we are engaging with SALGA, especially during the induction program, we'll also be looking at this matter so that perhaps we come up with a principle of how do you deal with issues of lifestyle audit in the local government space. Honorable Mas, I'm not qualified to really comment on the relationship among the law enforcement agencies. We are aware sometimes that there are those kind of things that are happening. But within the anti-corruption team, those things are not necessarily manifest there. What we have there is just an indication to say, look, we have given this report to you. We want you to give us an indication. Because the emphasis that we make in those committees is that, look, we want an indication of whether there is any particular prosecution that is happening. You have correctly indicated that we didn't put the NPA there as part and parcel of the stakeholder, but if you look at the last slide where we are talking to them, we have been engaging with them to say, look, we want you to dedicate some people to issues of local government. And what we wanted there was to also sit with the prosecutor that will be dedicated to deal with local government matters, to understand some of the prescripts that are there in terms of the MFMA and all issues of Section 82, so that at least when they are zooming into those cases, they are able to form a winnable case. One thing that perhaps we didn't include here, Honorable Chair, is also the engagement that we had with the SIU. They were giving us two people, but the way in which they were proposing how we should pay them, that's the one that made me not to re-agree to their proposal. Because I had to pay a deputy, it was an assistant director, more than a director general. So I said, no, I don't even have the money to do that. Because they are doing their work on a cost recovery basis. So those are some of the things that one should comment on. Now, in relation to the way in which we have organized ourselves with SALGA now, Honorable Masondo, we have resuscitated a top management
committee where we meet with SALGA and say we should not be duplicating things at the local government stage. That is why even now in the council election program, even when we went to the local government theater to fund it, we went there in the committee of SALGA or SALS, the School of Government. And the reason we included the School of Government, we were saying after the induction program, we need to also have programs that are designed specifically for specific councillors, for NQF levels and those qualification frameworks that I'm not really familiar with. So we do have that kind of engagement with the with SALGA. Perhaps lastly, I've mentioned the issue of the support staff to MPEG. We have a risk element that is there now in terms of cost containment measures. We are going to have in the department a project that is going to be looking at what kind of an organogram goes to which kind of a municipality, because sometimes you find that the organogram is bloated, but you don't have anybody who is supporting the critical institutions like the MPEG. So we will have that particular project, I think, correct. The one that we will say, if it is a municipality of this size, this is the kind of structure that you will require. And for those other municipalities that may not necessarily have the requisite capacity, we'll be looking at options of where you have an MPEG that is not necessarily for one municipality, but it's just a different kind of an environment. But those are some of the options that we do have looking at the nature of our economy. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks,
yes, I wanted to add something to what the DG's just mentioned about the NPA. That currently we are also engaging the NPA with the other all stakeholders, including Treasury and the Auditor General, whereby we want to come up with the terms of reference for all the municipalities for their forensic investigators, because companies that they are appointing, they are not investigating correctly, they are not coming up with the correct reports. So hence, some of the reports cannot go through for prosecution or for maybe as well as good reports. So they would, they are coming up with a terms of reference, whereby we will distribute to all municipalities that when open decisions provide, they should investigate under these terms of reference. Where will be continuing for the specific processes that we should be following in investigations to obtain source document, all those things. Because most of the reports that we submit, they don't have they need some of the documentation. That's why there's less prosecution, there's also more investigation than prosecution.
Okay. Listen.
Is there just one aspect that maybe the other members would like to know in relation to if that is indicating the kind of capacity to be used for cash quantities, in particular effects? The department together with SALGA and other stakeholders have dramatically improved in terms of induction counselors. We are going to have an induction program that is going to be on a 5-day period. Thereafter, it's going to be a specific setup capacity building in municipalities, in particular on financial related matters. So the induction program is in a way that the 5-day induction program is in a way that we are going to be going a district-wide approach where we are having few councillors per district, especially those who are new. We do not want to have all of them in one hall for a group of 5 days and we have a talk show. After the 5-day plot, we are going to zoom into specifics now. Council committees being capacitated on an ongoing basis. Our capacity program is based on 3 phases. The second phase will be where we go to specific municipalities with specific attention to, for example, financial aid matters, how these the sections of their committees are going to have capacitated on their oversight role. So there's going to be an ongoing training until the third phase where they will be certificated for purposes of the when they exit the sector so that they are well equipped also for them to impact whilst not even in the sector for them to support local government. So our role again, they have identified that even now we are going to study the system, the Status Act in relation to the impact that terrorists should be giving. We've got a role again to capacitate for them to exercise the oversight over a period of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Another addition from the staff, the acting director general, if you are fine. Honorable members, any point I want to raise? Okay.
Chair, just with regard to the role of impacts, one of the concerns that has come up time and time again is the recent decision to make existing categories of municipality, the chairperson of impact, a full-time position. And as a result, there's been a change in the approach in a number of municipalities where the chairperson of impact was an opposition counselor, traditionally, if you will, to taking to be one of the governing parties, whoever that governing party might be, because they want the position, they want the money, they want the perks that go with being a full-time counselor. And I would welcome some input from the department as to whether or not they're going to relook that decision, either the decision to make it a full-time position, or whether there's going to be any kind of regulatory requirements that the position be one of an opposition chairperson. I'm not saying that any particular government in any particular province or area or municipality is right or wrong in this regard. I'm just saying that if we're going to hold people accountable, which is the part of, or the role of a municipal public accounts committee, then we need to be able to step away from the government and look at whether the government is right or wrong in their actions. And that's something that a person who is inside government can't necessarily do. So I'd welcome some input in that regard.
Okay. Department, please, do you want to make a general comment or issue? Let me check with you that Mr. Wando comes in. If you wish to do wish to make some comments, you are not possible.
No, I can make just a simple statement there. I think the guidelines that we have on the MPEC, they do not necessarily say that the chair should be coming from the opposition. And the debate that we had then was that, look, if you're saying the chair should be coming from the opposition, are we saying all these other councillors who are either from the ruling party of that particular municipality are in the ring corrupt or not? So in terms of what is in the guideline, it does not define that it should be. It just says it would be advisable that you can have a person from the opposition. And the issue of the full-time basis, I think it's a decision that the municipality takes, but the unintended consequence of that particular decision may result in what the Honorable Member is saying. At the moment, we have not really thought about re-looking at the guidelines themselves, except that we were looking at strengthening the legislation to say if you have an MPEC, as a Section 79 committee, it should not be changed willingly.
I find the comment to be very interesting. Even where we come from and where we are, the appointment of people to positions is a person of this kind. It's a political choice. So it will differ from political party to political party and from period to period. South African has been the ANC that has championed this kind of an approach. It will be very interesting to see what the DA does in municipalities like Nelson Mandela, Tshwane, very, very interesting. So I think it's very exciting type issue. Very, very interesting indeed.
So,
think Madam is committed to that. You are committed to back your leadership also to.
Chair, I've spoken to panel first.
No, fine.
I didn't talk about political parties. I said specifically that it was applicable to all municipalities, and I find Honourable Masondo's implications quite objectionable, actually.
No, I get that the point that was made, though, know, is that member of the portfolio committee can make those proposals to various parties, try to lobby them to give it to Honourable Masile. If you are located in Jobe, or if you are in Swane, or Heaven, it can be very difficult to regulate, so, because all the parties depend how they want to work on this matter. The bigger issue that has been raised is that suspension of staff at the local government level takes years. The person is suspended, in fact, I think many of them anyway, must be dogs has now. People suspended for 4 years, paying every day, almost every month, are not doing anything except that they're staying home. And there is something that we must really work out, because I think if who can do that? That they were suspended, in fact, some of them were even forgotten that they are suspended. I think the best thing, I think we shouldn't do that, we should tighten it up a little bit. And then I hope that the committee, as we conduct our oversight function, and I think we have agreed that we are going to have a very vigorous oversight function with the metros, all the metros, and sort of figure work on them. Because they are very important, the areas of economy in our country, I think we should do so. And then I think we should look at this, because I know that even department has kids. There are a lot of people who are working in our national department who got suspended for 5 years. 3 years, minimum rate would be about 2 years. I think it's too long. I'm not sure how it takes so long, because the procession processes, labor laws should be followed in Zimbabwe. Then to have people who are permanently suspended. And then, because I don't think it's correct to do that, I think it damages the individual involved, but also it's bad for state to do that. If the state is found guilty somewhere, it must deal with that matter sooner. Them to live for years and years and years, because I think it's creating problems for them. In fact, very easy now to go to local government in other areas and got employed and make some mistakes. And once you make that mistake, you go home, you run your business, you pay the side, and it's just causes problem and harm for the country. It's something that we must make some follow-up by sure, because we are doing this much as I think it's very important. I think the bigger issue for them, you raise, of course, the agencies that do corruption. And themselves, they must be very effective in some of these areas. Yeah, I thought we agreed, even when Praveen was the minister, that some of the forensic report must be implemented. But it seems very few that are implemented. I'm not sure about maybe the Nelson Mandela one now. Another report in Japan. There are a lot of friendship reports that have been there for some time now. For example, 4 years, 5 years. Kulego was 5 years. But no one is implementing them. But we wasted a lot of money conducting this forensic audit. But when the report is there, no one is willing to implement that report. I think it's very wrong. I think upon Honorable Masson is saying for the better good of our people. I think we should emphasize that as a team, particularly the portfolio committee, as we do our oversight function, overseeing the entire government structure in our country. And we are keeping very robust in this area. When the report are there, must be given to the National Department for their perusal, and then action must be taken if there is something wrong on that. But not all of them, anyway, they point to some corruption. Actually, are very expensive to conduct them to do that. And I think we should do that. And then we'll see as we move on. New metros are there.
new council have been constituted, but by the end of this week we'll have a key issue. And then how many councillors now, and then how are they doing things, and those who are coming back, those who are not coming back. And then Banka also, generally, is very clear as it is. So there are some of their leadership maybe not around. It's a lot of help for, I think, for Skeeti to ensure that the department plays a very supportive role to all these other state structures. Because if you don't do that, I don't think they will survive, or so they will do anything on that. I think the report, because it was a good report, is very helpful for us. I think what we should just ask the reports, decision must be implemented by the council. I don't understand why the council can't take a decision. Simon, why the council in Dumbe can't take a decision? And the report is with them for 5 years. They don't take a decision. And I think it's very bad for us. I think we should not allow that. But the department, I think, is here. He's assisting us to address some of those issues. Of the colleagues, and unless there are more comments, what should I find? Your report is fine. I think one of the chapter commented some of the issues that must improve also. I just have to dissect them to know if they can help anywhere. I think we'll give you that one. Okay. Honorable members, honorable now, in common I feel members. So Mrs. Bloody, in common I'm now. Skeeti must stay from now. So that's why I was like Christian in the sense. Stay from now. These cases are gone. You know, Cleveland without cases can't survive. And I think we are buying for this now. Okay. Okay, let us agree then that the general mission. But hopefully, we are going to finalize our points and leadership contest of Biden and the team. I think that's true with the program now. So we have to make that people that we're working with the management committee. And then work it out and see how we finalize it. Because it has been with us for some time now, I think we should conclude to it. Thank you very much, and again, congratulations to Skeeti for the acting position. The meeting is adjourned.